Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We've got good news. The world is open again, and people like you, people of faith, are traveling to Catholic sites around the world. Want to travel with exceptional Catholic leaders this fall, next year, or in the future? Are you looking to see specific sites, celebrate traditional Latin Mass, or travel to destinations without vaccine requirements? We are here to help you deepen your faith on pilgrimage. Give us a call at 1-800-842-4842 or visit us online at selectinternationaltours.com. Select International Tours is your pilgrimage company, and we have the perfect Catholic trip for you.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Welcome back to The Shepherd's Pie, a slice of hope to raise faithful kids. I'm Tony Kolenk, a professor at Ave Maria School of Law, the father of five, a homeschooling columnist, and the author of the suspenseful adventure series for teens, The Harwood Mysteries. I've got some exciting news today on that, by the way, for which I'm very grateful to God. In my Harwood Mystery Series, Book 4, The Merchant's Curse, just won a gold medal in the 2023 Illumination Book Awards in the young adult category. So that means each of my books now in the series each have their own gold medal. It makes me very grateful to Loyola Press for the high-quality work they've done putting the series together. But on today's show, we're actually going to be speaking on a bit of a more serious topic. We're speaking with D. Rodney Brown, an assistant U.S. attorney, of course, with the U.S. Department of Justice, about child exploitation on the Internet and what we can do to protect our youth. My guest today is D. Rodney Brown, an assistant United States attorney for the Middle District of Florida. As a federal prosecutor, he's tried dozens of criminal cases, including ones for drug trafficking, child sexual exploitation, and human trafficking. Interesting aside note on him, during Operation Iraqi Freedom, he actually deployed to Baghdad, Iraq, in a civilian capacity with the Department of Justice, where he assisted and advised the Iraqi High Tribunal in the investigation and prosecution of Saddam Hussein and other high-ranking regime members. So that's pretty cool. But since 2007, Rodney's been assigned to Project Safe Childhood, which is a DOJ initiative committed to the investigation and prosecution of child sexual predators. And he lectures frequently at the DOJ National Advocacy Center and other seminars and events on such topics as internet safety. He also happens to be a close personal friend of mine, and I'm very grateful, Rodney, to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Tony, and I'm happy to spend some time today with you and your listeners.
Wonderful. So yeah, your background, and I only read a part of your bio, as you know, so maybe just talk a little bit about how you got into the law, into DOJ.
Sure. I didn't grow up always wanting to be a lawyer. I actually grew up wanting to be a doctor and made a decision to slow decision over a period of years when I was in college and sort of transitioned to being interested in the law and decided to go to the University of Florida. From the beginning of my law career, what I really wanted to do was try cases. As part of that, I became an associate in a law firm here in Jacksonville, which is a great firm, and really enjoyed my work there. But what I really wanted to do is get into court. I made an application to the Department of Justice. They were looking for a civil attorney at the time. It turns out that I did not get that job. But about a month later, they called me back and said, "We have a criminal position. Are you interested?" And I said, "Well, I am. Thank you very much." And over the course of the last almost 28 years as an AUSA, I've had a number of jury trials, many jury trials, lots and lots of investigative work with agencies such as the FBI, Homeland Security, Secret Service. For the past 15 plus years, have really sort of specialized in child sexual exploitation involving the internet.
None of that had to do with you going to Iraq, though. What was that, just an extra duty they gave you?
Well, I became interested in participating in some meaningful way through the Department of Justice and the Department of Justice asked for volunteers to go over and assist in that investigation and the prosecution of Saddam and some of the other high-ranking regime members. And so I raised my hand once, and they picked somebody else, and I raised my hand again, and then they picked somebody else, and the third time I raised my hand, they picked me. And so it was a great experience going over, spending time with our military and other folks of all different agencies, other coalition countries, Australians, the Japanese, other coalition partners, and really had a fantastic experience and really got an up close view of some of the terrible things that Saddam Hussein did and the gratitude of the Iraqi people that we were there.
You've been involved with a lot of pretty cool stuff, but a lot of pretty serious things. And I guess kind of moving into this idea of some of the child exploitation cases, tell us a little bit about just what types of cases, like what spectrum of cases are we talking about when you say you deal with child exploitation on the internet?
There are a number of different types of cases that we see and investigations that we're called to assist in. There's, of course, child pornography. And so we see production cases, production of child pornography. We see distribution cases where individuals send it and receive it across the internet. We see possession cases as well. We also deal with cases involving children that are online and get approached by some person on the internet who is trying to either meet them for some illegal conduct or is trying to groom them or set them up for that. And so we work with a lot of those types of cases as well. And then I would say also we deal with cases involving cyber stalking on occasion, which sometimes involve child victims. And then we also deal with what are sextortion or extortion cases involving child victims as well.
You said you originally wanted to do civil cases. I can't help but think, and I'm sure our listeners are probably thinking, wow, how are you able to work on these kinds of cases where I'm sure you are exposed to, you know, some of the worst of humanity and some of the worst, you know, victimization of our kids? That's got to be a tough job.
It is. But the great thing about it is it's very gratifying, too, because the agents and the investigators and the police detectives across not only Florida, but across the country are extremely dedicated to protecting children and rescuing children, if that be the case as well. Because there's one thing is protection, rescue is quite another. And there are occasions where through the executions of search warrants or through connecting the dots in an investigation or even missing child investigations where a child goes missing and it turns out they were either abducted or they were coerced or groomed to be by some type of sexual predator. So we deal with all those cases, and they can be difficult, but there's a lot of training that's involved in this. There's a lot of wellness type care that's available. So we're able to take advantage of those types of things too. And just working in a group like this where the results can be so gratifying is its own reward.
You mentioned some of these prosecutions, and you know, some of our listeners might not have a real sense of, you know, what goes on in a prosecution of somebody that you catch who is trying to exploit children on the internet. Can you kind of give us maybe a thumbnail sketch of what a, if there is such a thing as a typical prosecution, what that might look like?
Let's say, for example, and I know you and your listeners may be familiar with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. They receive tips from around the country and really, I guess, around the world, from individual citizens just like you and me, or from companies like Google or Snapchat or Twitter, when there is some user on those networks that either have some type of child exploitative material that is being distributed or is posting messages that are indicative of child exploitative conduct. And when that happens, essentially the NCMEC, which is the acronym for the center, is able to process those, and they're able to essentially, a lot of times, geolocate where the source of those postings come from through IP addresses and other advanced technology. And so let's say, for example, if NCMEC receives a tip that comes from an IP address that geolocates here to Jacksonville, Florida, that's part of the investigation is trying to find out where the IP addresses are, then oftentimes what we'll do is then receive that tip. It'll be farmed out to the local FBI or the Homeland Security Investigations or the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office or some other law enforcement agency that we work closely with. And they're all of them here. And then through additional surveillance or other types of record searches or open source searches or subpoenas that we get for subscriber information, for telephone numbers and internet service and what have you, we can develop probable cause for a search warrant and then execute the search warrant that is the source of that posting. And then oftentimes we will find inside a person who is the source of that posting. And we also have the authority based on the search warrant to seize their media and then to search that media, looking for the fruits and instrumentalities of the offense. And so that's how a lot of cases begin. And then forensic examinations are done of those devices, whether they be smartphones or tablets. Many times there are child exploitative material on there. We find corroboration with the posting or the distribution of child pornography, and then that person can be charged in federal court.
Wow. And what typical sentences would somebody expect to get if they either produced, possessed child pornography, or were actually trying to actively reach out and exploit a child through the internet?
Well, without getting into the details of the sentencing, because that's a judicial branch function and judges are the ones who determine what the sentences are. But suffice to say, Congress has deemed it appropriate to treat violations that involve child sexual exploitation pretty seriously. And so prison time is frequently a result of a person who's found guilty of committing one of those offenses.
All right. Here we are. We're talking to parents and teachers. They're thinking about their kids on the internet. And a lot of times, you know, we all know, okay, you got to be careful on the internet. I have a feeling it's a lot more dangerous out there than maybe some people really appreciate. So maybe kind of, if you could lay out for us what you see as some of the dangers that you've encountered with kids going on the internet.
You know, the thing about applications, which is the way we do business on the internet now, right? We still go to websites and such, but, you know, the average person's phone is going to have a bunch of applications on it that you can just press the icon and you're in it quickly. And that's very, very convenient. But what that also means is that in the hands of a child, they have almost instant access to things like, and these are not necessarily bad things, but uncontrolled, they can be without parental supervision. So things like YouTube, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, are all separate and apart from child exploitation, are all often filled with adult content. And so to the extent that young children are being presented with that type of content, that's not a good thing.
So talk about that real quick. I thought that those apps go out of their way to make sure they don't have that kind of content that would be consider pornography or things like that. I mean, I even know myself, if I'm on YouTube, I don't recall ever straying accidentally into something that I would consider shocking to see. So how is that going on?
You probably have to ask the folks that operate and administer the apps, but there's no question that many of those apps have adult content, whether it's legal pornography. They do their best to eliminate child pornography. Many of the apps do. I know that a lot of them work very, very difficult, and hence they're their source of the cyber tips that I've mentioned before. They want to report these things, but adult content is legal. And so when children are exposed to it, there can be obviously ramifications to that. And many apps, I'm not saying all, but many apps are designed to facilitate an addiction to the app. They want people to use it. They get clicks, or, you know, there's monetization that's going on. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. We live in a capitalistic society. But parents should know that those apps are designed to encourage use. So, and I think maybe one of your guests a few weeks ago talked about that apps are designed to facilitate or to encourage addiction. So that's something that parents should be aware of.
All right. So even at this level, before we move into other dangers on the internet, what are some tips you might have to try to minimize even the risks that you're referring to right now?
One of the things I would say is that be very careful putting a smartphone into the hands of a child. It's important to protect children from adult content, from exploitation, from child pornography, etc. and from being exploited by individuals, because it's important to remember that pedophiles are out there on the internet and they are working 24 hours a day to get to children. It's just a fact. And so they're working really hard to get your children. And so we as parents should be working hard to protect our children. And one of the ways we can do that is to not put a smartphone in the hand of a child who is not able to handle it. And we can't predict the future. Nobody has a crystal ball. But it's important to realize that every child is different. Some children might not be mature enough to have a smartphone until they become 15. Others, it might be younger. But I think we can all agree 3, 4, 5, 6-year-olds probably should not have a smartphone.
You've already sort of strayed into the next area of questioning, I think, which is, like you said, predators who are actually actively trying to reach kids. And this is an area that maybe most of us don't know a lot about. Tell us a little bit about what we need to know in that area.
There are applications that are out there that we've seen being exploited by individuals who have sexual interest in children. Snapchat, WhatsApp, Kick, Discord are just a few. And these particular applications are designed to have people communicate. But individuals with a sexual interest in children know that. And there are certain of these applications have various public chat rooms or public chat groups where people with a particular interest may meet. Like, say, for example, there may be a room that for kids that like to shoot BB guns. I'm just making that up. But there are also applications that have public chat rooms or groups. Sometimes they're public, sometimes they're private, that are designed specifically for people with particular sexual interests. And oftentimes those sexual interests involve children. So it's important to know that's out there and to be able to sort of be aware of it so you can protect your children. One of the ways that can be done is to really be careful about how mature the child is before you place the internet in the palm of their hand, but also to use particular parental controls to help protect the child. Things like timers, limiting the amount of time the child spends on the internet or has access to the phone, keeping it in a lockbox overnight or away from them overnight, never letting them use it in private space, like a bedroom with a closed door when mom and dad aren't around, things like that.
So let's say there is middle schooler, teenager on one of these smartphones, and they're on one of the apps you mentioned or some other one in a chat room, like the BB gun chat room. So what would you say you've seen would be an example of how a predator could even exploit a child in a totally harmless sounding room like that?
A scenario that might play out, and we've seen similar scenarios like this. You know, the predator gets into the chat room with the BB gun, strikes up a conversation with a particular child, let's call it child number one, and begins talking to child number one and says, "What kind of BB guns do you like?" And then there's a conversation from there. And then oftentimes the predator will then say, "Hey, have you ever tried the blank app? Let's move over there so we can talk in private. Or can you text? Why don't we move to text? Because it's more private." And then now you have the targeted child, or the predator has the targeted child now isolated in a private room where there are no administrators, there are no other individuals who really are interested in BB guns. And now the grooming has begun and the child is now isolated in a one-on-one conversation after having been almost enticed into a friendship wherein they have something in common, that is BB guns. And then we see time and time again, more intense grooming takes place. Sex is often, or body imaging, or those types of things are often deployed by the predator to sort of break down the defenses to the child. Sex is often injected, and it doesn't take very long. It doesn't take very long to do that. And if you're dealing with an 8-year-old child, those children don't have the type of defensive mechanisms that say you and I have as adults, or that even a 15 or 16-year-old have. And then the game is on.
It sounds like that, you know, most of the most concerning stuff is not going on in the general room. And so it's a common practice to get them in private. That would make a lot of sense. Are these predators usually posing as another child at, you know, the similar age, or do they hide? Are they hiding the fact that they're adults?
We've seen both. We've seen adults that pretend to be children. We've seen adults that pretend to be parents of children. We've seen adults that pretend to be friends of other children. We've seen adults that pretend to be friends with the parents of the targeted child. And any, almost any combination that you can imagine there. It's a social experiment that the child is going to be the loser and the predator is hoping to be the winner.
All right. So in a lot of these cases, is the predator usually going to be getting, you know, the child to take pictures of themselves or something? Is that kind of the goal, or are these cases really they're trying to entice the child into a real place in the world where they can actually take advantage of the child?
Could be either or it could be both. Oftentimes we see in travel operations, that undercover travel operations that we do periodically, we see that individuals are looking for children to go meet. In other occasions, we see simply that the predator or the offender is trying to build a collection of child pornography and is hoping that the victim child will contribute to that.
And then typically, what is that type of a predator doing with that collection?
Good question. And it depends. It is oftentimes the subject of obviously personal gratification, but oftentimes also it is distributed to other individuals and traded for other child exploitative, child sexual abuse material. There's a lot of trading and distribution of child pornography that goes on the internet in various applications and various platforms. And essentially, the predator is trying to get currency to trade for other and maybe even better things, according to them.
So the child who sends this picture, assuming they never wind up meeting these people in person, hopefully never, they might not even realize it, that the picture they sent has now become part of this currency you're describing.
That's right. But there are other twists on this theme, like, for example, which I mentioned before, sextortion, where a child may be coerced into providing some type of photograph that is private, inappropriate. And then once the offender has that, he may then use that as a bargaining tool or leverage to get additional photos from the child or videos of similar content. Or we've also seen just straight extortion, where an offender will say, okay, I'm going to send this to all your friends, or I'm going to post it on whatever application or whatever website or on your Facebook page or what have you, unless you pay me $100 and give me your credit card number. That is common as well.
All right. So this is pretty scary stuff. So aside from what you've already told us, obviously, you know, keeping the smartphones with limited use, keeping the child in a more public place when they're on their phone or computer, what are some other practical things that a parent or a teacher or grandparent could do to try to make sure their child is not going to be exploited in this way?
Well, communication is so important. Communication with the child, knowing what the child is doing on the internet and talking with the child about it, warning the child about the dangers that exist with some specifics, and then monitoring it, whether monitoring it by having the child near you while the child is either playing the Xbox game online or using the tablet online for gaming or chatting with a friend. All those things are going to be helpful. And encouraging the child to make sure they know that he or she can come to mom or dad or grandma or grandpa, and if something happens, they can trust to report that to mom or dad.
All right. And my show, I like to have the tagline, a slice of hope to raise faithful kids. So maybe that might be a nice way to sort of start wrapping up. Are you seeing positive signs out there? Any signs of hope that might be worth sharing in this area?
Sure. I think one of the things that is important to note is that many, many children are successfully protected from internet predators by good parenting, good teachers, and sound protection protocols for devices. And we see that a lot. We see it our internet safety presentations where parents talk to us about that, about how they learned of a particular technique or particular apps to avoid or ways to install parental control software or applications to not only protect the child from online sexual exploitation, but other things too, like having geolocation apps in case the child gets lost or, God forbid, abducted, things like that. We think people are getting, that folks are getting smarter about those types of things and those protections.
And I know a lot of times my guests will have their own personal website or something people can go to. Obviously, you might not be in that category, but are there websites you might direct my listeners to if they want more tips like this and ways to protect their kids?
Sure. A couple that I can recommend. One is NetSmarts. It's NetSmarts, NetSmarts. It is a great website. I think it's www.missingkids.org, which is, it's connected with NCMEC. And they've got great instructional information for protection for parents, for teachers, for schools. They have online presentations that you can watch. I think there are some of them that are there on the website that you can find. It's really a great resource for parents and teachers alike.
Wonderful. Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show today. I know your time is really valuable. The work you do is so critical to protecting kids in the communities. So thank you for that. And I appreciate you sharing some of your wisdom on this with our show today.
Well, Tony, thanks for having me. I'm happy to join you. And I appreciate the opportunity to sort of share some of this information with your listeners.
Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for the show today. We've been speaking with Rodney Brown about the dangers of child exploitation on the internet. Again, this is Anthony Barone-Kolenc. If you have a question for me or a topic you want me to cover, go ahead and drop me a line on my website, AnthonyKolenc.com. You can also learn more about the Harwood Mysteries on my website. Until next time, may God bless you and your families as we work together to raise faithful kids.